All right, we are back. Episode 20 of the Reporter's Corner. I'm one half your co-host, Jared Rubato, with the Bemidji Pioneer. With me is the other half of the co-host, Trent Singer, with Sioux Falls Live. Trent, how are you doing today?
Doing good, man. We wanted to get a player on this week.
Did anything big happen in the CCHA last Saturday in Sault Ste. Marie?
I believe there was a champion that was crowned, and they did their laps with a trophy.
The oldest trophy in college hockey.
The oldest trophy in college hockey. The Minnesota State Mavericks won the McNaughton Cup last weekend for the ninth time in program history. We were hoping to get a player on this week. Unfortunately, it fell through the cracks a little bit. They're pretty busy as the season's winding down here. They've got a big series coming up this weekend against Bemidji State. Ton on the line. And so we had to pivot. And so we got on somebody who has a great perspective of this team, and Matt Dean, who is in his first season, doing play-by-play for the radio for Maverick Hockey. And he replaces a legend behind the mic in Mike Sullivan, no pun intended. And Sullivan, if you remember, spent, I think, 24 seasons as the play-by-play guy for Minnesota State, called 914 games during those 24 seasons. And so they've got a new guy, Matt Dean, and I think that the folks in Mankato have been super happy with him. He's done a great job. He's such a good guy, and he's just been, you know, we've chatted with him on the CCHA show, Jared, and I know, you know, when I was in Mankato a few weeks back, got the chance to catch up with Matt, talked a little while too. It was cool to just kind of learn a little bit about his career, and he graduated from the University of Wisconsin in 2015, and really got into broadcasting during his time at Wisconsin. And eventually landed a job in 2015 out of college with the Charleston River Dogs, the Yankees single A affiliate. Did that up until 2019. And then in 2023, he started working with the Triple A affiliate in St. Paul with the St. Paul Saints. And then obviously last summer gets an opportunity to take over for Mike Sullivan and become the voice of Maverick Hockey. And so we talked a little bit about this year's team and just kind of what has allowed them to, you know, to be so successful this season. And obviously that takes us down the path of player of the year candidates and Alex Tracy and Rhett Pitlick. But, you know, we got his perspective on some of the guys under the radar as well. And he had some really good stuff to say about it. And then we also kind of got his take on just the CCHA in general. You know, some of the teams that may be lurking in the background, some of the front runners outside of Minnesota State, because clearly Minnesota State's the top dog going into this Mason Cup playoff. So, Matt had some really good perspective on all that. And then obviously we closed it out with some entertaining one-timers, you know, just our run of the mill stuff that we do here on the CCHA show. But this was a good interview, Jared. I thought it was a really good chat. I think we talked for about 45 minutes with him and
yeah.
Had some really good stuff.
Yeah, no, Matt's a great guy. I met him when they came up to Bemidji for a series in November. We bonded out over how cold the Sanford Center press box is, and he was I had not had my personal space heater yet by that point, but so we just sat there shivering. Matt's a great dude, and if you like baseball, there's a lot of baseball talk.
Got a lot of baseball stuff in here.
Yeah, so have fun with editing this one, Perry. But so let's kick it over to our interview with Matt Dean. All right, we are back with another interview, and this time, finally, again, we get a little bit of Minnesota State flair in here, and it's Matt Dean, play-by-play guy in his first season with the Mavericks, and. What a first season for you to hop on board. I mean, it's been a great ride. Obviously, they won the McNaughton Cup last weekend at Lake Superior State. And just what's this experience been like for you personally to kick things off here?
Yeah, it's been fantastic. I mean, I think Minnesota State have obviously built up a reputation as kind of being the class of this conference for many years. And a lot of folks, you know, figured there would be some kind of step back with all the turmoil and the transition that happened, right, when Mike Hastings left and a lot of his staff and the players. And you wondered, you know, how much of a drop-off it would be. And the Mavericks a season ago were still in that McNaughton Cup chase, you know, heading into the final weekend. And a lot of players have kind of come and gone, but there's still, I think, quite a few left from some of those last couple of seasons of Hastings. They're obviously still around the Mavericks, so they still had very high expectations coming into this year. And, man, they showed it. I think it's really impressive what the Mavericks have done, getting right back on top of the conference and winning it this year. I think about as quick of a turnaround as you could have expected. And I think as quick of a turnaround as Maverick fans with very high expectations could have hoped for as well, too. So it's been fun. I think we saw it like early in the season. Minnesota State played a really tough non-conference schedule, split with Michigan at Yost, split with North Dakota in a series that the Mavericks very well could have swept in. They had a lead going pretty late until a 5-minute major kind of derailed things. So I think we saw some of the glimpses of where this team could go, and still some room to keep going here, obviously, with the postseason coming up. But it's been a blast.
You know, obviously, we got to ask a little bit about Sully. You replaced a legend behind the mic in Mike Sullivan. He spent 24 years calling MSU games. 914 games during those 24 seasons, which included a stretch of 504 consecutive games. Now, you're a little behind on catching up to that, but I'm curious to know what kind of a resource. We talked a little bit about this, I think, when I was there, Matt. What kind of a resource has he been for you just in your first year as kind of the successor in that role?
Yeah, he's been great. I mean, he means so much to Maverick hockey and just inherently tied with the Mavericks in people's memories forever, right? Like, he had all those big calls from the biggest moments in Maverick men's hockey history. So I've really appreciated what he's done for the program and for promoting the Mavericks. And he's still, you know, he's rooted in Mankato, so he's still around. We see him at some games, but I really appreciate him, you know, letting me be myself, but he's always there as a resource when I need it. He stops by. He's still got a ton of friends in the rink, and we love having him up there and welcoming him in when he does come back. But he's never real pushy or coming at me with a bunch of advice, but I've asked him a few times about some stuff, and he's always there for a lending ear. So, yeah, I mean, the best things I can hear is when, you know, people have reached out and said, hey, you're different, but we, you know, really like what you're doing. So I've never wanted to try to be Mike Sullivan 2.0. So I've tried to be myself, but he is phenomenal. He'll always be, you know, the voice of Maverick hockey, I think, for folks for a long time.
Have you gotten the chance to ask him about any stories or anything? He's full of them, man. He's like, I got the chance. I did like a Q&A with him after he retired, and he had this great story about playing the Russian team one time at, I believe it was in Mankato, and it was hilarious. But has he ever shared any of those with you?
No, I haven't. I probably have not tapped him as much as a resource as I should have at this point, but I'm adding that to the list. And, you know, now that I've got like almost a full year under my belt, I feel like I should be hitting him up more for some of those great stories.
They're good. I'm sure he has plenty too. He just gave me that one, and it was hilarious. Yeah, I'd have to like find that story, but it's pretty funny. He went into the coach's room after a game to ask about a player, and yeah, these Russian coaches couldn't speak English, and they had this like, it's pretty funny. Anyways, yeah.
We also want to get into your kind of journey to, you know, obviously Minnesota State in this role too. And it starts at Wisconsin. You graduate with a degree in life sciences, communication, and ag business management in 2015, which, to be honest, feels like a long ways away from hockey play-by-play. But, you know, yeah, from there you took a director of broadcasting role from 2015 to 2019 in Charleston as for the River Dogs, part of the Yankees affiliate in single A. So just talk to us how that kind of evolved into a broadcasting career and what appealed to you to go into play-by-play.
Yeah. While I was at UW, I was interested in some kind of broadcasting. I got into it from joining the student radio station. So I always like was getting a degree. I honestly wasn't sure that I was going to make a career out of it. So I got my degree like with a, you know, business school degree in life sciences communications, kind of as like a fallback. I wasn't sure how far this was going to take me. So I kind of got my reps doing student radio, like doing a sports talk show, you know, for an hour a week type of thing. We got to do play by play of a lot of Badger sports. So we would do the major big revenue sports. They're a Learfield school, but Learfield had an agreement where they would let us do like our student radio call streams. So we do some big Badger football games. We'd do men's hockey and basketball. We'd also get to cover some of the smaller sports as well too on campus, like softball. So I got a lot of my baseball tape because the Badgers are infamously the only Big Ten school that doesn't have a baseball team. And we got to cover some incredible, you know, women's teams, the volleyball team. A lot of times we'd be the only people broadcasting the game. That was really before the big women's sports boom that's happening, you know, with volleyball included the last few years. We would do women's hockey games on the actual radio airwaves that weren't being covered local media. So we got to do some stuff like that. It was phenomenal. So that's kind of really where I got into it. I spent an intern year with the St. Paul Saints the first year they opened up their new ballpark in 2015. It was the same ownership group at the time of the people that owned the Charleston River Dogs. And then I got a full-time job down there and lived in the Carolinas for a few years. And like you said, covered them when they were a Yankees affiliate and had a lot of fun down there and wanted to kind of get back closer to home and ended up moving back to the Twin Cities and have latched on with some opportunities here.
I want to ask you too about, you know, calling some of the big games at Wisconsin. Cause I mean, there's some obviously huge games that you guys get to do, whether it's basketball, football, hockey. I would imagine some volleyball in there as well, you know, with how good Wisconsin women's volleyball got. Do you have one game that sticks out or a memory that sticks out of it getting to that deafening level of loud that will always, it's kind of like burned in your memory?
Yeah. Well, I'm sure we're going to have a lot of fans that aren't big fans of the Badgers here. So I have one good one that was a good game for the Badgers, and then one very memorable, and that was a bad game. So hopefully that balances out a little bit.
Yeah.
The good one, I can remember covering for student radio one of the several Wisconsin-Nebraska just beatdowns of the Cornhuskers. And I'm having trouble. There's too many to remember. I'm having trouble remembering. I don't think this was the first game where the Huskers were in the Big Ten. But it was the one where Melvin Gordon ran for 408 yards against Nebraska.
I had a feeling that was what was coming, yeah, honestly.
It was the NCAA record for about a week. And then who was it? I think it was an NFL guy at Oklahoma. He literally beat the record a week later. I think he was at OU.
Yeah, I think you're right.
But it was an NCAA record that stood for 1 week. Melvin Gordon is still my favorite Wisconsin football player of all time, Kenosha guy. And that was a phenomenal game. So I remember that very vividly. It was in the snow. It was just coming down. We were outside. We had an overhang over us, yep. But it was a national game. So the student radio, we would sometimes get a nice booth. We were kicked out just outside under the overhang. And I remember calling that. So that's one that stands out. The other one, I remember a men's basketball game against Michigan State. And Draymond Green hit some free throws down the stretch. He was with the Spartans. And then Ryan Evans, who was a Badger player, he had a big flat top haircut. He hit a buzzer beater shot, but they reviewed it and waved it off. And like there were two different shot clocks, like the one on the hoop. And then there was one around the banner that wraps around the stadium. And the banner around the stadium was showing that there was time left on the clock. and the one on the hoop. This is where we learned about how sometimes those two clocks are different, and the one on the hoop is the one that counts. So upon video review, the buzzer beater that we thought had, you know, I think it was going to send it to overtime, it got waved off and Michigan State won. That would have been, I think, a big win against the top 10 team.
Both enjoyable for me. I don't like Wisconsin or Nebraska, so I have no feelings towards Michigan State.
Yeah.
Those are both enjoyable for me.
Same with Nebraska particularly. I cannot stand the Huskers. So love that story. And it was Samaje Perine that broke that record.
Yes. Yep.
So, Chiefs legend.
Melvin Gordon only played like three quarters. If they would have let him go in the fourth quarter, that record would still be standing today. They just, the game was so lopsided. They benched him.
No, I remember that game. I vividly remember it. Cause he was ripping off like 60, 70 yard runs, like every other handoff. Yeah. Like it was crazy. Melvin Gordon in college, man, he was something to watch. We do want to get into a little bit of what you're doing now, right? Because you eventually became the play-by-play voice for the St. Paul Saints, the Twins AAA affiliate in St. Paul in 2023. You're still in that position, right?
Yeah, so I've been part of their broadcast team. So Sean Aronson's been the voice of the Saints for a long time. He was my boss when I was an intern back in 2015. So I've been a part of their broadcast team. We've got several of us who cover all the home games. This year I'll be covering some road games from the studio. So I kind of get to stay at home during the summer, and be a part of a big chunk of their broadcast this year. So yes, they've been AAA for the Twins. When I worked for them as an intern, it was the last few years of their indie ball years. And they've been the Twins AAA affiliate basically since post-COVID when they reorganized a lot of the minor leagues.
Yeah. So just that role in particular, how rewarding is that kind of been for you too? Because I mean, that's right. You know, just next door, really.
Yeah. It's been fun. I mean, I moved back here and tried to kind of stay in the ear of some people that I knew over with the Saints, hoping for an opportunity. So grateful to them for kind of letting me step in and fill in. And then they've had, you know, an opening where I'm get to be more involved these last couple of years of the broadcast. So love doing that. Have always loved baseball and hockey as two of my favorite sports to broadcast. The Saints have just had a phenomenal setup for a long time. I mean, it's such a fun atmosphere to go to games. And then when they opened up that new stadium, that's when I worked for them, like I said, in 2015 as an intern. And they've always had a top-notch like game presentation. Then they had the facility to back it up. And now you get the added extra bonus of, you know, seeing AAA level guys and a lot of top prospects pass through there. And getting to have that on top of all the great atmosphere, front office, and just experience of going to a Saints game before having the AAA element of it just makes it even more fun to cover.
Oh, Saints games are awesome. They're so much fun. I loved going to them as a kid. I've just found out a friend of mine from college is now their AAA pitching coach. So I'm trying to go back again this summer.
Yeah, okay.
So, yeah, it's awesome. But I want to ask you, too, how did the opportunity to take over for Sullivan at Minnesota State kind of present itself to you?
Yeah, I remember hearing about it sometime in the summer, I think. I can't remember. Radio Mankato posted about it. I remember like a week or two before having heard about Mike Sullivan retiring. So obviously knew of him and knew Minnesota State had a long time broadcaster. So I was surprised. Radio Mankato, fortunately, like they opened up for applications basically. And I sent in some of my stuff, and got some interest back from them. And, just really, really fortunate it worked out. It's been a blast. And, they just posted for the role. Couldn't believe it. Cause you just kind of, like I said before, like when you think about the Mavericks, and broadcasting, you think about Mike Sullivan and, he just had decided it was time to hang it up. So they were out looking for somebody. Don't really have a great story otherwise, but I was immediately interested in the role. And just like really excited when it popped up and they were interested in me.
So you, obviously, like, you're a big baseball guy, right? Like, but when, like, have you been a hockey guy your whole life, or is this something that you kind of had to pick up as you went along with the career?
I never played. I'm from Milwaukee area, and I wouldn't say that's like the hotbed of hockey talent in Wisconsin. But no. I feel like a lot of the good players, my high school had their own team, and I do remember, like, it, the last couple years of high school, it became kind of a cool thing. People would hang out at hockey games in the winter. So we drive out, you know, it was a shared rink that we shared with a few other schools. My high school was one of the few that didn't have to have a co-op with other schools. So there was kind of maybe some like extra pride for it, because we were one of the few schools, it felt like, in the Milwaukee area where we had our own team, not our own rink, but we had our own team. So that, it became like a fun atmosphere to go to games. That's kind of when I really got into it. We had some really decent players. We had somebody go to Wisconsin that was within a year or two of me. He was kind of a walk-on, usually healthy scratch, last guy off the bench for the Badgers. But we had some good players. We would usually ended up go to state and get beat by somebody from Green Bay or Madison. And Eau Claire, I have to shout out, too, has got some really good hockey talent with all of the Eau Claire guys that we have on the staff of the Mavericks and a couple players. So I got into it then. I remember I went into the draw online portal to try to get student football tickets and being just crestfallen as a freshman when I didn't make it. So I went over and said, all right, I'm going to do hockey. And then I ended up meeting a lot of friends from going to hockey games and stuff, of people that also got hockey tickets in the dorm. So that's what I got into it. And really, like, the high school and the college game is like when I got into hockey, more so than the NHL. So college hockey's always been really fun for me. That's how I got into the sport. It's been a blast.
Well, Wisconsin's student section is like nationally renowned. I mean, they historically one of the better student sections.
It's good. Yeah. I was there during, like, when I was a student, it was like the worst 3 or 4 year stretch in the modern hockey era. It was the back end of the Mike Eaves era. And then I was there. Granado came after I'd graduated. So it was kind of the back end of the Mike Eaves era. So there were some lean years. We had some okay teams. But I don't feel like I saw the Wisconsin student section in its full glory. I think they're still on their way towards getting back to it, but it was good. It was like a smaller niche community of people that would go to the Badger games, and all of us that were there were really into it. But I heard about the glory days from like a little earlier, early 2000s and stuff. It was still pretty hopping. It's tough to fill up the Kohl Center. That's the biggest college hockey capacity, I think, in the country, and it's not close. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to fill it up, and there's a lot of other stuff going on in Madison as well, too.
But when it's full,
it's great when it's full. Yeah.
Yeah. We want to get into a little bit more about Minnesota State this year and what you've seen out of them. And I think from like an outside perspective, you know, everybody can see that they're a very good team. They're a contender to make the NCAA tournament, even as an at-large team. But you get to watch them play every game. And what is so, or I guess just what makes this iteration of the Minnesota State so effective and just so potent this season?
Yeah, I mean, you hear Coach Strand talk about it a lot and how the team is built, and it's from the back, and everybody knows about how great Alex Tracy's been this year and how consistent he is, and defense that's leading the country, you know, in goals against per game. And I think a lot of that has to do with Alex Tracy. I think a lot of it has to do with just the commitment that the whole team has to playing as a defensive unit. There are games where, you know, Tracy has to stand on his head and he'll come out and make a couple of flashy saves. But a lot of times they don't make him have to do anything super fancy for long stretches. Like they don't give up a lot of cross crease passes. They're just really tough to break down. Like when you're trying to just work your end zone offense 5-on-5 against the Mavericks, it's just a nightmare trying to find time and space. So I think that's really a testament to the whole team. And I think the two things that are maybe underrated about it is just Minnesota State rolls four lines all the time. They love the fourth line. There've been kind of four main guys that have been a part of it this year to varying degrees, but it's Olsen, Stender, Finn Williams at times, and Will Hillman have kind of been the traditional fourth line. It's been shaken up a little bit the last couple of weeks, but that's kind of been the core four in that fourth line. And usually they start the game, I think 20 times this year, maybe they've started a game with those three of those four guys. And then Mason Wheeler and Campbell Psychos on the blue line, because they just set the tone and have so much energy, and they don't score a lot, but that fourth line plays at 5-on-5. They play as much as any of the other four lines. So that's really underrated. And I think too, they're an incredible puck possession team. There are a lot of games where the defensive numbers are good, because we saw it, like, especially Friday at Lake State, they can just play keep away from the other team. And they're not always banging in 5-6 goals a night, but they're playing just kind of a style where they will just pass it around and play keep away for a couple periods, wait for an opening and score. And when you don't have the puck or it's in the offensive zone, you're backed into your own D zone the whole time. It makes it really tough to score. And when the Mavericks take a lead, they can just suck the life out of you, because you won't even have a look at the other team's goal when it's all working and when they're at their best. And I think we even saw that for some stretches last weekend against Lake State.
It's kind of what I've seen from them too, that they can wear teams down, right? Like they just kind of milk a game. Like, you know, I think I'm watching, it was either Friday or Saturday, I'm kind of trying to keep an eye on the other games. And, you know, it's like the first period, they're up 1-0. Second period ends, they're up 2-0. By the time the game's over, it's a 4-0 game. And it's like, that's kind of a dominant win, you know, and they suck the life out of you in a lot of ways. I mean, obviously everybody talks about guys like Alex Tracy, Rhett Pitlick. Who's one guy that you could point out on this team that kind of flies under the radar a little bit, but is still so crucial to the team's success?
I think the first guy that jumps out is Adam Eisley. I mean, he's got 11 goals this year. He's kind of what they've been rolling with lately. He's kind of the third man on that top line. Plays center with Grohl and Pitlick on the wings. And the Mavericks have had their stretches where they have a tough time, like, converting on chances and finishing. And there's just some games where it feels like they're outplaying the opponent. And I think that's largely what happened, like, in a couple of those losses that were some head scratchers to Ferris State and Northern Michigan to start the second half. It felt like they played well and created a lot of chances, but couldn't score. And one of the things that's been an emphasis for the team has been getting dirtier goals, rebounds, getting to the tough areas of the ice. And Eisley, the junior, he's as good of a guy as anyone on the team that does that. So he just kind of, he's got 11 goals this year. I think a couple of them have just been passed off of his stick by Rhett Pitlick. But that's not to say he didn't do anything, because he's, you know, getting the crap kicked out of him around the net. He's always just sniffing for goals around the blue paint. Like, he's taking a beating out there, but he's just getting a lot of goals by just getting to the net and letting those skilled guys on the wings kind of fire some stuff in, and he's there to tip it in. So I think when the Mavericks need a greasy goal, he's kind of the best guy. And it's also one of the kind of weaknesses of the Mavericks has been faceoffs. They've actually not been great in that category all year. They're seventh in the CCHA, but Eisley's a phenomenal faceoff guy. He's like nearly 57%. He's like top four in the conference. So when the Mavericks are in a big game and they need a face-off win, I'm not worried about it, because they can bring in Adam Eisley, and he's kind of a clutch player in that regard too. So I think he's underrated for those handful of reasons.
Yeah, he had a good start to the first half, and I think he's kind of withered away here in the second half a little bit in terms of point production. But yeah, no, Adam Eisley definitely stands out to me too. I think that's a good answer, man.
Okay, now we're going to talk about Pitlick and Alex Tracy, because those two are just, I mean, look, they're the two front runners for CCHA Player of the Year, and we'll start with Tracy. Just what has led him to have this kind of season, not just on like a league scale, but also a national scale?
Yeah, I think it's just consistency. When I look back or think back on the goals he's given up this year, there's just not a lot of soft ones. Like he really just becomes more impressive the more you watch him in the aggregate, because he's not allowing a lot of second chances. He's always square to the puck. He usually doesn't have to do anything fancy or make flashy saves. And part of that's because the defense in front of him is so solid. There will be games. I mean, that's typically his game it's a quiet, consistent, steadying presence back there. But then he'll have games like Friday where the Mavericks played just an absolutely dominant period in the first. I think they outshot the Lakers 18-4. Tracy just gets a kickback and watch. And then all of a sudden they scored early in the second to go up 2-0. And then that it felt like Lake State started to pin the Mavericks in their own zone. And all of a sudden he came up with a couple of crazy double saves. One of them, he kind of doesn't squeeze a save with a trapper. It falls out to the weak side and he still is able to recover and slide across and deny a guy point blank. And it just, I thought it was really impressive. After he'll have these stretches where the Mavericks just have the puck so much, or they're dominating on the other end, and then he can just flip the switch and just turn it on in a moment's notice. So you don't want to have to rely on that, but it's nice, I think, for Minnesota State to be able to do that when they need to. That's what stands out about Tracy. And he's just really calm and collected. He's not like your stereotypical goalie loner guy. Like, he's kind of one of the leaders on the team, and really gregarious and friendly. And the CCHA just named him the student athlete of the year. So he's obviously getting it done on and off the ice. So great guy, easy to root for as well too.
And what stands out about Pitlick?
Rhett Pitlick is, I mean, I don't know how he's not going to end the year's the CCHA forward of the year at the very least. He's instant offense. Like, this guy is magical. It's an X factor for the Mavericks, because if they get in a situation where they need a goal late, I think they're a dangerous NCAA tournament team because they're so tough to break down defensively. But if they're in a game, you know, against an opponent that's favored and they're down late by a goal, like, Rhett Pitlick's a guy who could just change a game in an instant. So he's just having an unbelievable year. And I don't know what else you can say about this guy. He had a couple plays over the weekend where he just had it on the wing and the power play and nobody wanted to even get close to it. And he just did like 17 head fakes and stick moves in a row and never backed off and just let him do it because nobody wanted to get close and just get undressed by him. So the attention that he gets and how much of a focus he is by other teams to shut him down to still be doing what he's doing is pretty sensational. 35 points in the season now.
So if you get a vote, like, if you had to pick the player of the year between those two, who gets your vote?
Oh man, I'm more of just like a traditionalist where I think, like, I like don't in baseball, I don't think that pitchers should be able to even be voted for MVP. Like, there should just be separate awards. So not anything against Alex Tracy, but I just defer to the skaters. I defer to the position players in baseball for MVP. And I kind of have that baseball mentality for hockey. So I would vote Pitlick, but nothing against Alex Tracy. I mean, I just, it's so, the goalies are just so important to the sport. I just feel like I have to separate my brain when I'm evaluating them together with the rest of the player pool. So for that reason alone, I'll cop out and go Pitlick.
That's like the opposite of football, right? It's like a quarterback.
Every right. Year. Yeah.
Right.
You can't get away from that.
Right.
So obviously, you know, Minnesota State, clearly the top dog in this conference. I mean, there's no denying that. That, you know, they're the one that everyone else is chasing. But I'm sort of curious to get your thoughts on kind of the rest of this field. Which team in this conference do you think poses the biggest threat to their supremacy at the top?
I think maybe some recency bias going in there, but I think Augustana. I thought they played a really tough series against the Mavericks. That second night, I mean, Minnesota State I think would even admit themselves, at least for two periods of that game. Augustana kind of outplayed the Mavericks on Saturday, and Minnesota State were able to just kind of cling to that 2-1 lead they had after the first and lean on their defense and goaltending enough to take away a win. So I think there's some similarities in how they play and how they're built with a good goaltender and just an organized defensive group ahead of them. They kind of lean on depth a lot and match up well with the Mavericks in that regard. I think Michigan Tech are not far behind too. And the Mavericks almost, you know, outright swept Tech. They had a chance to go 12 for 12 in points and lost in a 1-0 game on the Saturday a few weeks back in Mankato. But to me, you know, having seen every team at least once, just Tech just feels like a team that's, I kind of see it as like a top three in the league that have separated themselves. Bowling Green, I may be down on because I haven't seen Christian Stover. So I think Bowling Green are dangerous now that they have the goaltending position settled. But I thought the Mavericks kind of outplayed them. To me, it's Augustana and Michigan Tech are in that like tier just below the Mavericks. And I think those are the most dangerous teams to shake up the CCHA.
How about this one though? I mean, you know, I feel like it on the CCHA show, you and I were on their mat and talked a little bit about it as well. The bottom of this league though is intriguing for sure. And it could pose for an interesting first round. I mean, who's the biggest sleeper maybe in that bottom tier of teams that you see and kind of maybe a team that could even emerge and get to the semifinals and you get there and it's a one-off game. Who knows?
Yeah, whoever finishes like fifth or fourth at the end of the weekend, right? I mean, everybody else outside of the top.
St. Thomas right in there?
Yeah, I think St. Thomas. I've been high on St. Thomas all year. They've played the Mavericks incredibly tough both series. They can score. They have top-end talent. You know, now after him, you know, pumping their tires, like go ahead, go figure, they'll go get swept by Michigan Tech or something this weekend, who again, I think that's one of the better teams in the league, but St. Thomas have played like great periods against Minnesota State. I think kind of the story of their seasons, they've struggled to put together a full 60, but, they scare me with some of the scoring talent they have. And Cooper Gay is a big bodied forward, scored a couple power play goals against the Mavericks. He just big guy that can skate and move. He's scary. Liam Malmquist having an unbelievable year. And it just feels like that St. Thomas team, like their program's direction's headed in the right way. They maybe haven't been able to round out their decor as much as people thought yet. Like they pulled in some big names the last couple of years defenseman wise that I don't think have panned out the way they thought they would. But just because of the scoring threat, you don't want St. Thomas just always feel like they're a moment away from a breakaway goal to get them back into a game. So I think that's the team that I'd be scared about. That's going to finish like many others somewhere in the 4-8 range at the end of this weekend. They could literally finish anywhere in there. I think St. Thomas, maybe St. Thomas like seventh is as far as they could fall, but something like that. It just feels wide open going into this weekend for those 4-8 spots.
Yeah. St. Thomas is like the sleeping giant. That's what they felt like the whole first half of the season. And they finally like woke up a little bit, and yeah. I still think they like struggle a little bit in the consistency side of it, which is what gives me a little bit of trepidation in that 3-game series. But in a best of one, that's like one of that's the lowest, like a bottom, yep. You know, the bottom half team that I think everybody should be like, whoa.
I think it's big for St. Thomas to make a push at fourth or get in that five spot. Like if they have a winnable best of three matchup, yeah, like they could win a coin flip, you know, one off game for sure after that. So, but if they fall to like sixth or seventh this weekend, which they could drop as far as the sixth seed, I think if I have it right, that would be a little more problematic for the Tommies if they have to, you know, match up with a Tech or a Bowling Green or something in a the three series. I like the higher seed in a best of three, but St. Thomas is scary in a one-off.
The idea of like St. Thomas winning Friday night and having home ice on the table only for them to not get it and have to go to Bowling Green after had that would be the biggest like fall from grace of potential outcomes. But
trying to extend that life of the St. Thomas Ice Arena as much as we can.
It's like, hey, you can either play at home or you can travel halfway around the country to play in front of zero home fans. And oh God, it's just hey, look, every game counts. That's what you have to play every game and all the points count the same in the end. So, well, we're going to wrap this up here with just some kind of fun one-off questions for you. And, we'll start with this because Trent came up with this question, but he says, you live in Sioux Falls, but you commute. No, or St. sorry, Paul. St. Paul, St. not Paul. Sioux Falls. Trent lives in Sioux Falls, not you. You live in St. Paul, but you commute to Mankato for games. But what is your number one food recommendation spot in the Twin Cities?
Oh, great question. I just went. My wife is an incredible cook. We don't go out to eat a lot, but we just went out to Hyacinth on Grand Avenue last night. If you like fancier places.
Okay.
It was great. I think it's like up for, I think that's one of the couple of restaurants near us that's like up for like the James Beard Award. It's kind of similar to like a Michelin star type of deal, a little less prestigious. I had some great pasta there last night. Highly, highly recommend. So Hyacinth on Grand Avenue, which is in kind of my neck of the woods in St. Paul. Like
that. Gotcha.
St. Paul's got so many good places, man.
Yeah.
And that's a loaded question. every time I go, cause my cousin lives in St. Paul. So if my wife and I are ever, you know, going to a show or come out to the cities, for whatever reason, we stay with him. And it's like, we will wake up and we'll check, okay, where have we not been? And there's like, I swear the list is like 40 or 50 restaurants that we have to, have to pick between. And so it's like impossible. I'm going to remember that though. Next time I go, besides St. Thomas Ice Arena, where's your favorite place you've got to call games?
Oh, good one. In the CCHA so far, I'm trying to think. I mean,
no,
you can pick anywhere.
You can put it all. And I'm sure if you pick anywhere, I have an idea of where you're going
to
go.
Sure. I mean, we went to Yost at the beginning of the season. That was pretty cool. I mean, the Friday game was a phenomenal crowd. Saturday, it dropped off a little bit when there was not in town, but there was like a road football game going on.
Mm.
But the Friday night crowd was electric. That was a pretty cool place. And that was just special because that was my first game with the Mavericks. So that one's always going to stand out. Houghton is phenomenal. I'd been up there as a student before. We were there just before Thanksgiving break. So I hope we go next year, not close to a break, because the crowd was still good, but the student section was a little thinned out. And I've seen it in its full glory, but it's been a while. I'm excited to get back out to Tech next season. That's always a standout, just because you know it's the place is going to be bumping. Always love that. Also, like, underrated, because I didn't have much expectations for it, but I really liked the trip to Northern Michigan. I think they have a nice rink. They've had a tough season, but there was like a solid crowd there, and we went out. And I just like that town being right on the lake. I enjoyed that trip quite a bit. So
it's a charming looking town. If I go to the UP, Marquette is the city I really want to go to. And obviously, exactly. I'd like to check out a game in Houghton. That arena is just so cavernous, right? Like it's almost like walls.
Yeah,
the way the
Houghton, it feels like you're it's like really steep. The stands go like really high, really fast. Yeah, makes it intimidating though.
Where's your favorite place you've ever called any game, any sport?
I think it's one of these hockey places we've met. I've been to a lot of tiny like minor league baseball towns. Asheville, North Carolina has a great old stadium.
Oh, yes.
Always.
And Asheville's awesome.
Asheville, North Carolina is like my number one recommendation for just random places to visit that you maybe wouldn't think of at first. Love going to Asheville in minor league baseball. They had a, They have a really great ballpark. It's like built into the side of a mountain, basically. It's been there for 100 some years. Like Babe Ruth played there as a visiting player. It's got all kinds of history. So that for like baseball, that was a cool, like old tiny stadium and a great venue. So that's what stands out from baseball so far.
All right. Who's the most talented hockey player you've ever covered?
Oof. Great question. I think it might be Rhett Pitlick.
Yeah.
I don't have as extensive of a resume of guys that I've seen play. Seen a lot of like really solid high school players, but I think Pitlick's NHL caliber. So he it seems like and he's pretty reserved and doesn't talk about it too much, but it seems like he kind of took a bet on himself, go back to college for another year to kind of get a better pro offer type of thing. And I think it's paying off for him. So I think his stock's rising. He looks great.
Who is your favorite player you've ever gotten to cover in any sport?
Oh, man. I'm disappointed that one of the years I was in single A baseball, I never got to see Juan Soto, but I remember the year that he ascended from single A to the majors in like less than a year. He started the year like in the league I was in. And I remember we kept going. It seemed like we were like following the bus of the Hagerstown Suns was the national single A team. And we would always be at the place where the Suns just were. And they would just point to me, oh, Juan Soto is here. And one day he hit one there, then he hit one there, then he hit one there. Like every play, you're just in the wake of Juan Soto for like a month. And we were set to play them in mid-May. And I was like, there's no way he's still going to be on this team when we play them in mid-May. Sure enough, he wasn't. I did see like a loaded Braves team in single A, and Ronald Acuna Jr. was kind of right before his breakout year. Like he was hurt for most of the year and then he played in the playoffs against us and he was pretty special. So I think that might be the best just like athlete I've seen like it covered in a game before, I think. So I think he's up there.
For sure. Well, we asked this to all the players and you know, you've made your rounds too. So who's the most famous person in your cell phone?
Oh, in my phone. I got to think about that.
Luke Strand.
I mean,
Don Lucia.
Nestor Cortez Jr. made an MLB All-Star team. Is that impressive?
Yeah, you guys that's all? A pretty good one.
Nestor Cortez Jr. was like a 35th round pick or whatever. He was on the River Dogs when I covered him. And I always thought that guy was going to be good. I always thought he'll make the majors. He didn't throw hard, but I always felt like he was going to be a major leaguer.
Yeah, good eye. Good eye for talent.
Yeah. A lot of other people agreed with me, so others didn't as well. I remember like one manager from another team. I was like good friends with the other broadcaster, and this other broadcaster was just enamored with Cortez, and we both were. And people loved him too because he would pitch these like gems where the game would be over in like 2 hours because he would just work fast and just get a bunch of ground balls. But the other manager said, "Oh, he's just some typical lefty." So I remember like some manager thought, some bum that was gonna flame out in double A. But I'm trying to scroll really quick. That's probably the most.
That's a good one.
Yeah, like I don't have a number, but like I got to meet a couple like famous. I've met Reggie Jackson in person. I don't have his number, I'll go with Nestor Cortez Jr. I got him.
Was Reggie Jackson the most famous baseball player you've ever met?
I think Reggie Jackson by far.
I was gonna say
it doesn't get bigger than Mr. October.
Yeah, if you had,
I set up a couple interviews. I kind of tried to coax him up to the booth, but didn't want to press too much. That didn't happen. For baseball, I've met Bill Murray before. I don't have his number, but he was an owner of the River Dogs and used to be an owner of the Saints, but I've met Bill Murray before. I was in a video with Bill Murray, so I acted alongside him, but I don't have his number. So nobody messaged me and tried to like get in contact with Bill Murray. I have no way to do that. That was half my job working for the River Dogs, was just people trying to use me to get in contact with Bill Murray, and I truly was useless for it. So
I met Jose Martinez one year. That's probably my biggest baseball, on a caravan.
Yeah.
In Cape Girardeau.
You got Joe Mauer. That's about it. So
that's big. Yeah.
You've been in a lot of sports atmospheres, right? Different teams, different locations, but do you have a memory that kind of sticks out along your career that you kind of look back on as like, maybe it was really funny, maybe there's just one story that's kind of, you know, maybe the hallmark of your career? Do you have anything like that?
I don't know about any hallmark moments of my career. I mean, I've got a lot of just funny stuff of things that have happened to me on some road trips and stuff in baseball. I don't know. One that I can recall, it's not a landmark moment in my career or anything, but just one like funny story that always sticks out with me is every year I worked for the River Dogs, the Yankees always had like really good pitching development. We always had arms and were in every game. Like, it made it interesting to broadcast the games where we weren't always necessarily the best team, but when we would lose in agonizingly close fashion. Had a couple rough years where we were one of the top pitching staff in the league, but couldn't hit. And we were on like a really rough stretch of hitting. And I just remember like seeing a photo after the game. We were in like Lakewood, New Jersey, and the broadcaster for the other team sent me a photo, and our manager just grabbed all the bats out of the bat rack and threw them in the garbage because he was hitting so poorly. So that's how he decided to like send a message of how fed up he was with our hitters. He just threw all the bats in a trash can. So I still have that photo somewhere. It makes me laugh every time I scroll through of just all the River Dogs bats just piled up in a trash can.
Oh, God, that's amazing.
Message sent.
Anyways, that's I think that's it. I think we've taken enough of your time today, Matt. But this was fantastic. Great getting to hear a little bit about you and obviously your thoughts on just what's been another really, really impressive Minnesota State season. So thank you so much for joining the show today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This was fun.
All right. Once again, thank you to Matt Dean for joining the show. Subscribe to the CCHA show on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from. And subscribe to the CCHA on YouTube. Follow us on Twitter at TrentSinger, at Jared Rubato BP. You can check out our work at BemidjiPioneer.com and SiouxFallsLodge.com.